Blog Talk Radio.
Please,
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Yvonne Mason, your host for my show called Off the Chain. Those of you who have been with me since the inception of this show on July the 27th know that I interview just about anybody and we'll talk about just about any subject. Nothing is off the chain. And the reason for that is because in our life there are so many things happening in the world between politics and murders and police brutality and authors and musicians and artists and you name it. Tonight's show is one of those shows that is very personal for me on many levels. And it is personal for my guest on just as many levels. And what we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk about a subject that has been taboo for many years, and the reason it is taboo is because the victims that this subject affects are threatened, intimidated, bullied, harassed, and in the end, they still lose. And the reason they still lose is because they can't fight the people that abuse them. You can take a family that has a car, a job, a house, and children, and when Child Protective Services is done with them, they have nothing. They don't have the children, they don't have cars, they don't have their house, they don't have a job because Child Protective Services destroys families. It is a pay-for-play. They steal children, they sell them, then they pay other families who sometimes are very abusive and these children die or become part of the system. And they pay these families to allow this to happen to these children. Tonight, my guest is Miss Stacy Soares. And Miss Stacy Soares wrote a book called State of Sadness. And this book tells about her story of the fight that she fought for her foster daughter, who was taken out of a very bad situation. The sad part is, when Stacy got this child, she knew nothing about the history of this child. And when she tried to get help for this child, the corruption behind the closed doors and the broken child welfare system caused her to lose this child. Stacy decided to write and publish the book for awareness and to be a voice for all of those who are threatened into silence. She is currently a marriage and family therapist in private practice and has been doing this for several years now. She is a mother of two adopted young women, and then she was previously a foster mother and a social worker prior to becoming this child's foster mom. Yes, she was a social worker. Yes, she knows firsthand the corruption, the deceit, the lies, and the total destruction that Child Protective Services puts upon families to totally destroy them. It's all about the money, ladies and gentlemen. And as we talk tonight about this subject, just remember that in 1996, the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, and his wife, Hillary Clinton, and I don't know what your political persuasion is, don't care, but these are the facts, were instrumental into signing in the Adoption and Safe Families Act. And the Adoption and Safe Families Act was a pay-for-play. What they did is they pay different families from the birth family take in children. And they pay them very handsomely. And the more children they take in, the more money they make. And what they do is they put these children on psychotropic drugs so they get more money. They are paid for doctor's visits, Christmas, birthdays, special occasions. They are paid a clothing bonus. They are paid gasoline money. They are paid trip money. You can make quite a bit of money off of children in your care as a foster parent. Now, I'm not saying that all foster parents are bad parents. Stacy is an exception. Stacy tried her best to take care of this child and give her something that she never had before. However, the system completely failed this child, destroyed this child, and almost destroyed Stacy in the process. So, Miss Stacy, welcome to my show tonight, and thank you for speaking out.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Let me ask you this before we get into the book and your story. Let's just take a little walk down memory lane. What made you become a social worker or want to get in that field to begin with?
You know how they always say, you know, that this is your purpose or your drive. I mean, I think I've known all along that this is what I wanted to do way before becoming a foster mom and then adopting. I started in my early 20s as a mentor, and then I went to college and just kind of fell in this line of work. And I did a lot of volunteer work, and I started off that way. And I love what I do. I'm still doing it. So 30 years or so of being a therapist, social worker, foster mom, and I'm still doing this. So I just think it was my path.
As a social worker, and ladies and gentlemen, there are different types of social workers. You have social workers that make sure that the elderly are taken care of. You have social workers, like in Stacy's case, that does their work for good, for lack of a better word. She's not out to destroy lives. She's out to rebuild and help cement foundations for lives. Am I correct?
Yes, and I wanted to comment on that. When I wrote the book, it was not to say that all social workers are bad, because the social workers really are at the bottom. The decisions are made, when you said money and finance and all that, it's really about the broken system. It's not about one or two social workers in there. It's about how the system works. In my case, I do believe my foster daughter, was a money commodity, you know, because she was, it was either she goes up for adoption or she goes into group homes. And the thing I wanted to say about foster homes, that's also not all foster homes are bad. You've got really good foster homes out there, and then you've got the ones that aren't good. And we don't make a lot of money off of our kids because the amount of appointments they have, the special needs they have, it really depends on the child and what the child is needing. So I wanted to really make sure that was clear, because a lot of times we are taking money out of our pockets to meet the child's needs, even though they do help us. So I wanted to make sure I put that out there. I know group homes, however, which my daughter went into, make a lot of money, quadruple or more the amount of money that foster homes make. And basically it's a holding container for them, a holding ground. It's you know, you're in a group home. You're not in a family. So
all right, let's start with the history of how you got your daughter, and then
okay.
We'll work our way into the group home and what happens
sure.
with all the money and the manipulation. So
sure.
You decided that you wanted to have another child in your home because you are a fantastic person, Stacy. I've watched you and
oh,
we've talked
to you.
And you are to be commended.
Oh, thank you.
And what you went through with this child, it would be hard enough to go through with something like that with a child that you had had naturally, that natural bond was with. But you brought this child into your home and opened up your heart, your soul, your mind, and tried to embrace this child and give her something that she was totally missing.
Right.
So tell our listeners the journey about how you got this child and what happened.
Okay. Prior to becoming a foster mom, I've mentored 4 girls over the years. And, you know, but then I wanted to get my education, my career and all that before I took one on as a foster mom. And so I did it in that path. Then I was ready. Okay, I want to be a mom now. You know, I was already a mentor. I was an aunt. I have nephews. You know, I have 4 wonderful nephews. And it's like, okay, now I want to be a mom now. I have my career. I have my education. I have my home. So that is when I took the steps to become a foster mom. And they're lengthy steps to become licensed foster home. At least here in California, you have to go through a lot to get your license. So I did that, and the story I wrote was my second foster daughter. I had one prior to her, and then after she left, then I've got this one. I'll call her Tina. I got Tina, and that's what the book's written about. I got her, and I knew when I got a phone call the night before she came, and they were driving here. I only had, like, less than 2 hours to get prepared for this child. So she came here, and I just knew right away, I just had this strong connection with her that this was my reason why I was doing this. I was supposed to be connected to this child. I'm very spiritual, and I really believe that, and I believe God guided this child to me. And I've been trying to help her ever since. She is now 26. But
what?
She was 11.
All right.
Yeah, she's
what
26.
Was the reason that this beautiful child had to be removed from her natural family?
Well, the story I was told, her birth mom was in and out of prison all her life. Still is. She was with her grandmother who became ill, and then she had to go into the foster care system. And I believe she was 8 or 9 when she entered the foster care system. She came to me right after she turned 11. She had just turned 11, and I was her 7th home.
So this child was taken out of probably the only home that she'd ever known, because her mother had been in and out of jail. Then
mm-hmm.
she was warehoused through revolving doors
mm-hmm.
of 8, 9,
different
10
foster homes.
Different foster homes before you got her.
Right.
So whatever trauma this child had suffered prior to living with her grandmother
right.
was exacerbated by being moved from stranger's house to stranger's house to stranger's house to stranger's house.
Correct. Correct.
Now,
she's been through a lot. That child was through a lot by the time I had gotten her.
So you as a counselor, now, the Catholic Church tells us, give me a child until they're 7 years old and they will be a Catholic for life. So by the time you got this child at 11 years old, after everything she had already been to prior to moving in with her grandmother and then being shuffled from stranger to stranger to stranger, and you have no idea what happened within those homes, by the time you got her, could you truthfully and factually say that her personality and her psychic was already cemented?
As a therapist, I don't believe that a person cannot improve. And what to improve, and we really have to work on the trauma with the child. it is harder when you get them when they're older and they've been through a lot. But I know a lot of foster homes who have adopted at age one or a few months old, and they still go through as much as I have gone through with this one. So there's no guarantee, even though they're a younger age, that you're not going to have a hard journey.
Well, that is true, because the old adage of a child bonds with its natural mother is, it's proven over and over again. But in Tina's case, Tina had already seen the world and its reality. And according, and if I remember what I read in the book, she felt a sense of abandonment that either she was going to be left or someone was going to leave her.
Right.
And doing that, did that make that more difficult for her to be able to function as a well-rounded child? She couldn't have a normal childhood, correct?
Well, the issue of abandonment, absolutely. When you have a child who's had that much let down, there's always that fear of abandonment. They always, I think, till this day, she still does. Yes, and I think that increases that feeling of rejection. Are you going to leave me? Most definitely, when they've had that many moves.
So what happens when, and I'm refreshing my memory in the book, when there were episodes out of the blue and you had no clue, because like you said, when you got this child, you had 2 hours, and when they brought her to you, did they give you any background on this child?
No. Very, very
so
little.
So when she had these meltdowns, before you could even objectively try to help her, you should have been able to know what the history was, but you didn't. So you were like flailing around in the blind trying to help a child who couldn't explain why she was having a meltdown, correct?
Well, I knew that her mother was in prison or multiple in and outs, and I knew that she lived with her grandmother. And then grandmother got ill. I mean, I knew that stuff, and I knew I was, I don't know what number of home, it was 6th or 7th home. I knew that. So I knew the surface stuff, but you know, you don't really get to know the details until the child starts letting you know what's going on. And even then, do the social workers even know all that? As a social worker, sometimes we didn't get the information. So I don't think you could know it fully. The thing that here in California that they don't share is the parents, like what are their mental issues and what's going on with them, which I think is important, because what if there is some genetic stuff too? But when you adopt, you're supposed to get that information to know what the bio parents and you know, whatever information that they have, they're supposed to share with you.
Well, let me ask you this. When she started having her meltdowns, when Tina started having her meltdowns, how did that affect you emotionally and mentally? Did you feel like a failure? Did you feel like there was something else you should be able to do? Were you ready to throw your hands up and quit?
No. Never, never have I quit with Tina. I mean, as you could see in the book, and even now as she's 26, and her life now is not a bed of roses. She's struggling. But I've never quit on her. Even when I had her here in my home when she was a young child, no, I asked for help, and that's when everything turned on me.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because that's one of the complaints that I have with the system, and you and I have talked about this. You asked And this is what happens many, many times when a parent goes and says, okay, I have these issues, I need your help. Rather than being part of the solution, they become part of the problem because they snatch the child, which is what happened in your case. So
right.
when you went and asked, which traumatizes child even more.
Right.
And the one passage in the book that literally kept me awake that night is when you all were in the hallway of the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I can get through this. And this child says, Mommy, take me home.
Mm-hmm.
That haunted me because
mm-hmm.
as a writer, I see that. And I hear the pain in her voice. Even with all of the issues this child had, you were the only stable environment that she knew.
Right.
So if you will, explain to the listening audience what happened when you put out a call for help and the end results of that.
Well, it turned prior to that. That was after that court experience in my book was after. She ended up being hospitalized because of emotional stuff, and all her nightmares, her flashbacks, her memories were all flooding to the surface. And, you know, it was emotionally draining. It was very, very difficult, too, because you're the holder of the trauma, too, when you're a witness. And
right.
It was just flooding out. I really didn't want to get her hospitalized, but I thought, you know, I've got to do something. I've got to get her help. And she was begging me, Mom, please, I can't handle this. I need help. So she was hospitalized, and when she was in the hospital, you know, it was very emotionally draining. And at that point, the social workers then said, you can't handle her. We need to put her in a group home. Well, actually, they put her in respite care, then into group homes, and she went into multiple group homes, thinking that was better for her. But that wasn't better for her. She was hospitalized. They put her on a lot of medication at that point, where she was zombied out really bad, and then in new homes, and then multiple group homes, and they thought that was better for her.
What was their logic for that being better for that child?
Well, they thought that I wasn't going to be strong enough to have her home, and, you know, all I was asking was for some support and help. You know, that's what the system is supposed to be there for you, right? Your social
right.
workers, and then when you adopt, you're supposed to have some kind of additional help. But I'm finding out from multiple people that is not there. So, you know, I would talk to my social workers. Okay, this is what's going on. You know, it was emotionally draining, and then they decided you can't handle her. She's going to go into group home. But as soon as they took Tina away from me, she would cry on the phone begging me, Mommy, please, I want to come home. Please come get me. I can't take this anymore. I can't handle it. I got multiple calls like that. And my hands were tied. There was nothing more. I mean, I went to court. That's why I went to court.
Because she was a ward of the state. They owned this child.
Yes. They owned her because of her parental rights, her birth mother who was in the prison, that was terminated. The grandmother had no rights. The social worker at that point was her parent. It had all the say. I had zero say. Neither did her bio parent, her bio family.
So we could honestly say at this point, this traumatized child who you had fought for tooth and nail, like a mother bear,
mm-hmm.
was doubly traumatized, doubly made damaged goods because the state assumed, and we know what that word means, the state assumed
mm-hmm.
that she would be better off in a group home with people that were probably as damaged, if not more so, than her, and with people who may or may not have really cared about her being saved.
Yes.
There's something seriously wrong with that.
Yes, and the system is very broken. And as you read my book, that's why I put the interviews from other foster and adoptive families in the back as well. Me being a foster parent, I also wanted to interview others to say, is there other stories like mine out there? And there's multiple stories like this.
So let's talk about the corruption within the system.
Okay.
You and I talked, and we both know that there is severe corruption within the system. And any time the government cannot, and I've said this since I can remember, that the government cannot raise families. Government does not understand the family unit. The government does not understand that bond that is formed between a parent and a child. And when you get people in a government organization that, for whatever reason, whether it's to just draw a paycheck, whether they went in with a noble cause and in the premise of this being in the system way too long, it's like being an undercover cop too long, they become part of the problem instead of part of the solution. So in becoming part of the problem, they start covering up the lies and they start covering up the lack of paying attention to detail. They start covering up the fact that they don't communicate with the parent. And for all intents and purposes, we're going to say you were this child's parent because you were more than a foster mother to her. You did not want her to go through yet another revolving door.
No.
You fought for this child like she was your blood, and for that, you are to be very commended, Stacy, because that was an awfully, awfully unselfish act to do. So,
thank you.
For the sake of this discussion, you are this child's parent. You were begging for help, and instead of helping you, the system decides, in all of its corrupt stupidity, well, we're just going to pull this child because this mother can't handle her anymore, and we'll just put her in a group home because when we put her in a group home, if it's like it is in Georgia, our county office makes more money because the group home makes more money.
Yes, the group homes definitely make more money than foster homes. But I wanted to say something about just the foster care in Child Protective Service in general. They are all run, at least here in California, it's all run on a county level. So if you go up to a federal level, they send you back to the county. Or a state level, they send you back to the county. And the problem with that is there's supposed to be guidelines that every county follows, but every county does their own thing. And that's where you find more corruption because they're not really following the guidelines. And, I think that there's where it's broken down there. And then you have all your different states, too. You know, are all the states run differently? I mean, or should we just be ran under one big federal, these are our guidelines and this is what we should be following?
But then even with that, the guidelines are twisted and skewed and sometimes totally ignored.
Well, that's my point, because I tried to get the federal level or the state level to come in, and this is what I want to share, to come in and check out the county my daughter was in. And do you know they shut the doors because I had Congress trying to get in there to check out how they were running it, and they said no, because of confidentiality, they could not come through those doors
They'd like to go back under that confidentiality cloak.
Yes.
It's confidentiality. We can't tell you anything because it's, which is, you and I both know is BS.
Yes. Oh, yes. Because in my case, absolutely.
If your child had committed a crime, it would have all become public record.
Yeah.
So
well,
your confidentiality is BS.
It's to cover up what I think, at least in my case, because I was told not to talk about this. Obviously, I wrote the book, and I've been in the newspaper, and I've been on talk shows. But I wasn't supposed to talk about this, right? You know.
Yes.
But confidentiality, I think, is very skewed. I understand being a therapist and a social worker at one point myself that, yeah, you don't talk about all the details of your child. But we weren't asking about that. What we were asking about is how are you running your business?
And
they would not let them in.
Because they knew they were not running the business like the business was supposed to be run. I'm sure
that's
that if
right.
they had gotten They would, if they had gotten in there, they would have found where files were falsified, not just maybe yours, but other files had been falsified where they said maybe they had gone out to the home as many times as they were supposed to and they didn't, or they had followed up and they didn't, or they had closed a case when maybe the case should have been kept open, or they had kept a case open when the case should have been closed and the parents left alone. It goes on all the time. Let me ask you this. How many caseworkers did you have?
Well, I went through private agency. So I didn't go through the county with a caseworker. I went through a private. So I had a county caseworker, and then we had a social worker with a private agency that came out weekly. And I don't think she had too many. I think maybe just a couple. In the 2 years that I had her. But the county worker, the county social worker didn't like my daughter. So because she was too much work for her and she was taking up too much of her time. And so I think she couldn't wait to get her off her caseload and into the group home scenario so someone else could take her over.
And she didn't
and
have to fool it.
She basically told me that. She's taking up too much of my time, and why would you want her? She's got too much issues. Why would you want her? I was floored to ever hear that from a social worker, because being a social worker, I would have never said something like that to my foster parents.
Well, let's talk about something that you brought up earlier in the short time we have left. You and I both agree that this corrupt system has led to something that is even more dangerous, more sad, and more corrupt, and we are losing our future children to this. Expound on that a little bit.
Are we talking about the human trafficking?
Yes, ma'am, we are.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen it all, you know. I've seen the system and then the human trafficking system. The problem with that is they look for victims. They look for easy targets. So they go in and get these kids in the group home scenarios. They watch them. And they may even be within the group home, whether it's through another child that's in there, and then they get connected into that awful system as soon as they turn 18 and they get out. Then they're connected. But they're connected prior to turning 18. And this is something that I really want to put awareness out there, that people have got to realize that our kids as society that are in foster care are prime targets for those who will be trafficked. I'm not saying that there are not other victims within bio families and other areas, but definitely the foster care kids are prime victims.
Because they're vulnerable.
Because they're the vulnerable, yes. And they're, oh, okay, you don't have a family. Well, we'll be your family. So here you got the gangsters, you got the drugs, and then you got the sex. And so how do they make their money? They've got control. These people have control over our kids who already feel worthless, who already feel like, well, where else am I going to go? who already feel like I don't have a future, and then they connect up with Romeo pimps and other people like that who promise them the world, but then imprison them in a very dangerous place.
And they exacerbate the abuse that they've already suffered at the hands of others under the guise of, we're your family now.
Yes. Yes. And then they promise them everything and, you know, coerce them in. And then after that, the abuse starts. And after that, the threat starts. And then they're stuck. They feel like they can't get out.
And they also get them hooked on drugs.
Yes.
They make prostitutes out of them, both boys and girls. There's no delineation between the sexes. They don't care. They probably even include them in other criminal activity like armed robbery, burglary, home invasion.
Yes. Yeah, and selling drugs, whatever. Yes.
Let's use your daughter for an example, just because we're talking about her. So she starts down this path, and she gets popped for something. Gets who she calls to bail her out, not mama. She calls her new family. So she's more indebted to Joe Pimp because he spent all this money. Then she's got to work twice as hard on the street.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of people, I mean, if they're not really aware of what goes on within the human trafficking environment, it's a very dangerous, dangerous place. And our kids are afraid to leave. And what really gets me is what you hear is, oh, once they turn 18, they have a choice, they're choosing this. No, this is not a choice. No one wants to sell themselves like that or be under a threat.
So let's
it's another imprisonment.
Let's say worst-case scenario. Something happens to a child out there, and who are they going to call when that child is murdered by a John or murdered out on the streets? They become a nobody in the system because there's nobody to call, there's nobody to claim their body, there's nobody to remember them, there's nobody to cry over them because the cops don't know who to call.
That's right. Well, those who haven't, my kids were adopted, but those for all the other foster kids that aren't, that, yes, that is, you know, who do you call? Who's their family? And that's the sad scenario with our foster kids.
And most of those children are, who knows what their future would have been had they not become prisoners of a corrupt CPS system.
Yes.
And then prisoners of the streets.
Right. And I don't know if people know that the human trafficking is, I believe it's number two crime. It's huge. And the connection between the foster care, I can't remember what the percentage was, between those who are being trafficked is huge. The percentage of the victims are from the foster care system.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're getting an education, this is what we want you to get, because we are losing our children from the foster care system to the streets, to the graveyards. We're losing our future. We have a mother here who, while this child might not be related to her by blood, as far as I'm concerned, this child is her child because she invested into this child, her heart, her soul, her energy, and she truly, truly tried to help this child become whole. And when she asked for help from a corrupt system, the system not only betrayed her and this child again, they were complicit in the path that this child took. Am I correct, Stacey?
Yes. Yes. And they want to scare you not to speak up and not to advocate. So if I leave any message to the people listening, is don't be afraid. Don't back away and be the voice. Our kids need us to be their voice.
If not us, then who? If not now, when?
And never stop.
And never stop. Because what CPS does is they operate on fear, intimidation, bullying, and threats. They will take a parent who they can intimidate, bully, threaten, and harm emotionally and mentally, and they will destroy that parent in order to get their hands on that child. Well, when they do that, we lose another thread in our tapestry of life. And how much are our children worth, Stacey? Is there a price tag for our children?
No, I don't think you, I mean, that's, you can't put a price tag on a human being. There
but
is
CPS
no price.
Has. But CPS
yes,
has
well,
put a price
well,
tag.
It's a money-making business because you have to hire social workers, you have to hire the directors, you have to hire, you know, and social workers, this is one thing I want to say, social workers do not make a lot of money. That's a misconception that social workers make a lot of money because they don't. But the system in and of itself, now we need a system for those kids who truly need to be out of a bad, bad situation.
I agree.
Is it always that case? No. But we need to have the system there. But we need to have a system that works. And
I
not
agree.
One that uses threats and intimidation. And for me, what I kept hearing is, we're taking too much of your time. Well, I don't care. This is your job. And when you've got kids who've been traumatized over and over, they're going to be a little bit more work. So that's where I had an issue with. You know, this is a little bit of work, and you signed up to do this job.
But let's don't do this job to the best of our ability. Let's just, and again, I can just about bet you that's why the county wouldn't let them in there, because they were not doing their job to the best of their ability.
No, and I'm sure they wanted to hide it, because the other piece in my book, too, is I went to the ombudsman at the state level when the agency was telling me and doing certain things towards me, and I reported it, and they went to them and said they can't do that. So they didn't like me because I did go over and above the county. I also hired an attorney on the state level that represents foster kids because my daughter was over-medicated, way over-medicated.
And they love to do that.
Oh, yeah, because it keeps them quiet. My daughter would always say, you know, Mom, they didn't want me talking. They want me mention you or say anything.
They do that, too.
And when this attorney called my daughter on the phone, the group home was standing in the room with her. Well, it's her right to talk to an attorney. And
without
so he
fear
said
of intimidation.
Yes. So there was a lot of that, and I revealed all that in the book.
So in the last few minutes that we have, as a parent who has not only had a daughter that has been abused by the system, but you have been abused by the system, what advice do you give these parents who are still going through the abuse, by the system who are still fighting, A, to keep their children, and B, to get their children back and be whole again.
Never, ever give up. And I didn't. Of course, my daughter didn't come back to me, but she stayed in connection with me. But if you are not a parent who's in and out of prison, who's high on drugs, who's abusing your child, I want to put that out there. So if none of that's there and you're a healthy parent, you know, and, you know, why is your child taken away? So if that's the case, do whatever it takes to fight and go above the county. If you have questions, if the county is doing something wrong, have them investigated. And it may be a fight, but I would not give up. At least your child knows you're not giving up. It's hard. I'm not saying it's an easy path or an easy fight, but your child's worth it. And again, if you're not a parent who's an abusive parent or is having your kid around a dangerous situation or drugs or anything like that, why is your child taken away in the first place? So that's what I would suggest, you know, and there are other people to talk to. Definitely get into support groups. Definitely, you know, if you need to, seek counseling yourself to help, you know, get through this time. That's important too. But you cannot ever give up for your child's sake.
Well, let me ask you this, Stacey. If you had your time to go over again, Would you do this again?
Well, let me tell you, after I took Tina on, I did take another daughter and I did adopt her as well. I adopted Tina when she got out of the foster care system. It wasn't until then. Would I do it again? I don't know. I don't know if I'd do it again. Was it worth fighting for her and writing this book and putting this out there? Absolutely. Would I do it a second time? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'd take this on again. But what I did with Tina, was it worth it? Was I supposed to do that? Yes, I was. I really believe spiritually I was guided to do this. This was my path. I had to do this. Is Tina in a good place now? Absolutely not. Did I put her there? No, I did not.
But yet,
I know in my
heart
I fought for her.
You did. You fought for her very. I mean, that book is well worth the read. Your heart and soul is in that book. And maybe one day, with your faith, she will come to realize that you were the only stable force in her life.
I think she does realize that.
And she will appreciate it. And she still has a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So never give up on her.
No.
Now, you are getting ready to write another book, correct?
I need to follow and write another book. But this one took me 4 years to write.
I've had a few of those.
Yeah. There's a lot there to go into a second book. A lot. It's very overwhelming to even think about that. But, yeah, a second book needs to follow this one.
Well, because a lot of people don't know that once a child ages out, they have somewhere, some places like California is 21, the rest of the places 18. Once they age out, they have no marketable skills. They have no way to advance their education. They have no place to call home. So where are they going to go?
I think they are trying to change that. The other piece, though, when we have special needs kids in the system, The other piece is it may take them several years to even want to grasp onto that and say, okay, I want to change my life. Or do they go down the same path of more abuse and trauma? So even to the age of 21, the person may not even be ready till they're 26 or
exactly.
older to say, okay, I'm changing this around. So in that respect, I don't think we can blame the system for that because it's very individual. I think some kids will grasp on and say, yeah, I want to go to college. I want to do this or have more time to be able to get my life together. But even our own biological kids don't get their life together by 21.
But most of them know that they have that anchor.
Right.
That they can come back to.
Right.
These children that are in the foster care system don't have that anchor anymore. It's jerked out from under them.
Right. Well, and I also think even with our adopted kids, the trust level and the connection, they question that throughout their adulthood. They question
that's
it.
That's true. Yes, they do.
Especially when you adopt older kids, which I did. They question, are you going to still be there? And they still test it. There is a lot to be changed within the system. And we brought up the other system of the trafficking. That is something that really needs to be looked at. I mean, these kids are being taken from the system into that.
And to another system.
Yes.
Which is destructive. We lose, I would venture to say that we lose 75 to 85% of our children once they hit the streets.
Yes. Yes, very sad.
And they die before they're 30.
Yeah.
They're still
it's
babies.
Sad. I wrote this book and published it in 08, so there's probably better statistics out there now.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. We are getting towards the end of our show tonight. My guest tonight is Stacy Soares, and I highly recommend that you read State of Sorrow on September 7th.
It's State of Sadness.
State of Sadness. I'm sorry, Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
September the 7th, Deborah Simpson will be my guest. She is a psychic. And September the 8th, Patricia Neely Dorsey, an author, will be my guest. September the 9th, Cypher, a wonderful band out of London, Ontario, will be my guest. And on September the 10th, Fran Ornstein, an author, will be my guest. So please join me as I interview these wonderful people. And, Stacy, I want to tell you that I am so appreciative and so grateful and so humbled that you would be to tell your story tonight.
And thank you for letting me do that on your show.
Well, you're very welcome. I know it's painful. It's always painful when we have to dredge this up yet one more time, but we have to make people aware. We have to. And the show will go into archives. I will send you all of the links. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to say thank you for tuning in tonight. Pass this show along. Learn what you can. Let's do something to change the system. Be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I will see you again on September the 7th with my guest, Deborah Simpson. Stacy, my dear. And to all of my audience, I say good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sweetheart. Hold on just a second. Okay. We're off the air.
Are we off?
Yeah.
Sorry, my dog started barking in the background.
Oh.
I don't know if you could hear him.
It's live radio. Don't worry about it. Sometimes I chase mine around the bedroom. The show is immediately going into archives. As soon as it archives up, I'll send you the link. It also goes on iTunes under Podcast Yvonne Mason. Under Off the Chain.
Mm-hmm.
It also immediately goes to Stitcher, which is played on Sirius Radio. I will upload it, and I will upload it to Spreaker, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, Podcast.com, and Podomatic. And I will send you, I will tag you when I put those links up on my page.
Perfect.
Use this show. Use this show in any way you want to. Put it on your website, download it, send it to people, whatever you want to do with it.
I put it on my Facebook, but I think it was too late for people to tune in. But they, I mean, they just saw as far as, now, I couldn't tell if anybody was on the line. Can you, as we're talking?
Yeah, what happens is if people call in, I get, like I saw yours and clicked you on, I
mm-hmm.
won't know what the bump is until after they go in and reboot the uploads. But I'm sure
okay.
that we had listeners because, oh, and contact Paige Roberts, go on my friend's page and hook up
okay.
with her. And get working on that second book, and let's make awareness happen.
Well, you know what? Maybe I should ask right now. Financially, I'm kind of in a bind because I didn't want to say this on the radio show, but I truly believe my daughter is in their trafficking stuff right now, and I have a 6-year-old granddaughter with her. So I am. That's why I kind of put the book aside for a while. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm fighting that.
Keep me in the loop. Keep me posted, and I will add. I've added you to my prayer list. You are on my prayers.
Okay, and definitely. But to go back to the book, I want to do a second book, but I'm having a hard time. I need to connect with someone who can help me start writing. And
well, honey,
I could tell the story, but I need someone to help me get started again. You know what I mean?
Send me what you need for me to help you with.
To get started?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't consider myself an author. I really don't. That took me 4 years to write. I didn't want to. I had someone say, look, you got to get the story out there. You got to do this. You got to do this. This took me 4 years for that little tiny book. But now I know I have to connect this to what happened to her.
So send me what you got and we'll get it going.
I so appreciate it. I got to get it started.
Yes.
I got my story.
Got
it's all in my
that.
Head.
All right,
oh,
my dear.
God.
I am going to let you go, and let me get this thing started and the podcast and send me your stuff.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, my dear. Anytime.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And hopefully things work out with your daughter and her scenario.
Things will be as they should be.
Yeah, I know. How old? Can I just ask you real quick? How old are your grandkids?
The is three sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They are 15,
ooh,
13, and 11.
So they're teenagers. How long have they been in the system?
Since 2009, they have been
ooh.
Adopted by the foster care provider. That's another whole story I'll have to tell you.
Oh, they're already adopted. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there were a lot of lies told, and they were pulled from the home without cause. Now, we're talking about Jackson County, Georgia, and
uh-huh.
they are an entity unto themselves. You're talking about corrupt. They are very corrupt.
Did your daughter have any history of drugs?
No.
Or?
No.
Oh, she did.
No.
Oh, no, she didn't.
No, she did
she
not.
She didn't.
No. No.
Why did they take him in the first place? I know it's hard to talk.
Poor. No.
Because
she was
what?
Poor. She was poor.
Because she was poor, they took her.
Uh-huh.
Because she didn't have, they were saying they were neglected or something?
Well, they tried to use that, and then they tried to use the term deprivation. Well, in the state of Georgia, if a child is deprived, that's a Class 3 felony.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if my degree is in criminal justice. So when they threw that one out, I said, well, then you need to charge her with a Class 3 felony and put it in the criminal system and get it out of the child's courts. Because if you're charging her, if you're saying that the children are deprived, then you've got to charge her. They never
mm-hmm.
charged her. So the
and deprived
not,
meaning not being fed? What do they mean by that?
they never were specific because they had no evidence. The children are beautiful, blonde-headed, blue-eyed children.
Mm-hmm.
And the CASA representatives was friends with this foster care provider who had seven other foster children in a 280-square-foot home.
Wow.
Racked them, packed them, and stacked them. She wound up with my three granddaughters. I ran a background on her and her husband.
Yeah.
And he made $34,000 a year. She didn't work outside of the home, but her salary was $100,000 a year.
With the doing foster care.
Yes. They took
those
children.
Because she had so many kids, probably.
Yes. They took those children and they built an almost 2,000-square-foot, two-story house.
Wow. See, I only took one, maybe two at the most. I never took more than that at any given time.
Well, that is what happened.
Yeah, that's sad. That's sad because that's why I say they have to have good reason for why the child is in the system.
And I'm going to do an entire show on this. In Jackson County,
mm-hmm.
the caseworkers get paid a bonus when those children go into foster care. They also get paid a bonus when those children are adopted out. The county office gets paid a bonus, and the judge's office gets paid a bonus.
Right. I think with the adoptions, I think that's correct here, too. But I took on very, very difficult kids. My kids were really hard. There was no chance of them going back to the parent. But in my scenario, my daughter's mother was in prison.
And that was a valid reason. And,
yeah.
And if the grandmother couldn't take care of her anymore, it was a valid reason to put her in a good home with somebody that would love her, not
exactly.
make her a commodity.
Right. And so with Tina's situation, I stayed in contact with the grandmother and her great aunt. So
she
still had connection
right.
with them. And then when they took her from me, everything was cut off. I think the aunt was the one who kept trying to stay in connection with her but kept her connected to me. You know what I mean? But
right.
But it was so bizarre in that scenario because, you know, I didn't have any of that going on. You know, I didn't have the drugs. I was her foster mom. I was, you know what I mean? Other than
right.
she was a difficult, difficult child. She was really difficult. And so was my other one. And
so
I didn't adopt my other one until she was 17 years old before I adopted her. Christine
See,
was in her
20s. You were the exception, my friend. You were to be commended for everything that you tried to do within the realm of possibilities.
Right. But the icing on the cake, and I want to share you this, and I didn't do that on the radio show, but after Christine got out of the system, of course, she had a baby, which was not a good thing because of what she's involved in now, and now it's a whole different story because she's got a six-year-old in this mess, in this mix she's in. After she was adopted, and I had my other daughter here also adopted, and she had her baby, we went to a reunion picnic with this agency. They had no clue I was going to show up, none whatsoever. They sent Christine an invitation to a barbecue or a picnic and to bring a guest. Guess who was the guest?
You.
Me. And I went there with my book. My book was already published. And the agency director was sitting there with a pretty big, well-known person, right? And they were talking. And Christine goes, "Oh, hi, and you remember Stacy?" And she looked at me, and she almost passed out. I said, "And by the way, I adopted her."
Good.
And by the way, my daughter took the book, and she wrote a book about it. And she went to the other foster home, respite home, who was her friend who took my daughter during the time she was taken from me, who her son was dating the social worker.
Oh, my Lord.
And so they're over there talking, and Christine and I are like, they're talking about us. And I'm like, I don't care. Let them talk about us. So we sat there with the other person who is a very prominent person, right? Said, yeah, here's my book. You want one? And by the way, there's a lot in here about the story of what happened.
But that
moment was the icing on the cake. That moment there.
And she was trying that, go ahead, sweetheart.
She was trying to be nice and everything, and we just kind of let her, but I know she was kind of sweating it out.
That's why we got to do the second book.
I got to do the second book. Oh, my gosh. But I wanted to share that because there was a little bit of a highlight in that moment, you know.
It's sort of, you know, karma is a beautiful thing, and revenge is best served on a dish cold.
Yeah. Well, I just have to hope, because I'm very spiritual, that God guided me down this road for a purpose, and that this isn't the end, that somehow my daughter will be out of this other mess that she's caught up in, and that my granddaughter is saved.
Faith will move mountains.
Yeah. We just have to hope out there.
Yep,
so
keep praying that God take care of it.
Yeah, that being said, I'm sorry. Do you have contact with, I mean, they're your grandkids. Do you have contact with them?
No. That
you
woman,
don't?
No. She teases my daughter with pictures of them.
Oh.
And when the oldest granddaughter started giving her a hard time, and we all knew it was going to happen because she has our genes, she wanted Sam to help her figure out how to put this granddaughter to heel. And I told Sam, I said, you tell her not no, but hell no, because she took this child, she's going to raise her. You're out of it.
And your oldest is 15 or 16? The oldest?
She's probably 16 now.
She's 16, and she's got a baby? Is that what you're saying?
No, she's given her adoptive mother fits because she has her own mind and she doesn't mind using it.
Oh, yeah, and she's 16.
Right, and the adoptive parent wanted my daughter, my granddaughter's mother, to help bring this child to heel and get her back under the adoptive parent's thumb. And I told Sam, I said, no, that's not going to happen.
I got you. Because you
have no responsibility now. This is on her. She wanted her, she's got her, she's got to deal with her.
And as long as your daughter is healthy and is not, you know what I mean, not doing what my daughter's parents did, you know what I mean? As long as she'll see them again.
Trust me, she'll see them again. I have no doubt.
Yeah.
A
couple more years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's already told her mother she's coming home when she's 18.
Yeah,
and the adoptive mother knows this, and she can't stand it. Sucks to be her.
Oh, yeah. And that's sad. I don't understand why the system would do something like that. And if there is no reason for them to take, like, an imminent danger or that they're not getting their needs met or whatever, your daughter needs to fight this and get that story out there.
Well, I have the case file, and that is on my list of books to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a blog that has been out there. It's got over 1 million views on it. And the entire story is out, including the names of all the 13 caseworkers.
Well, I know we really need to go to the media on a lot of this, television shows. My book was looked at by Lifetime. But they said it was too sad. The Lifetime, do you know Lifetime?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's too toxic. It's not so much sad as it's toxic because nobody wants to face the music. Nobody wants to understand that this is what's going on in the system.
It needs to be out there in a film or a movie because it will have more widespread witnesses.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
And that's where we need to go. And with this human trafficking, too. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
I mean, there have been a lot of movies out there about this, but But as far as how far I've gone to check into this, it's pretty scary. It's scary out there.
That's why we got to get your second book done.
I know. I know. If I could just find someone to sit down or over the phone and help me get started writing it, then I can get motivated maybe to start. I don't even know how to get it started.
All right,
I'm waiting for a happy ending.
I will send you my home phone number.
Okay.
And my cell phone number. And
mm-hmm.
We can work on this.
Yeah, just help me get started and maybe I could go from there.
Yeah, we can do that. But I'm going to get off the phone and go check on my poor husband who thinks I've abandoned him.
Okay, well, thank you for letting me be part of this.
You're welcome, and thank you. And we will
be.
Okay. Get hold of Paige, my dear.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, honey.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.